if you're doing it for money, you are not doing it for the right reasons.
You know, you can, you know, screw him over and, you know, get the most money out of that deal.
Hello team, we are the Two Fat Brokers. I am Barney from Dubai.
Ben from Abu Dhabi.
Thank you for joining us. And today we are going to delve deep into the murky, murky minds of real estate agents.
You need your wellies for this one.
And some hand sanitizer. We're going to talk about drivers behind real estate agents, what they think about when, you know, they're negotiating on behalf of their clients, you know, how they go about best representing their clients, you know, just a little...
Or peek, worst representing their clients?
Peek behind the satin sheets of the curtains behind... I'm stopping. So, what do you think? Let's start with...
Well, let's talk about the biggest motivator first, which is money. So how does money affect the way that...
I would like to say, and this is going to be a very... It's probably going to be quite corny. But if you're, this sounds like something Gary Vaynerchuk would say. If you're doing it for money, you are not doing it for the right reasons.
Right, but I mean, let's be serious here.
Oh, okay.
Everyone, you know.
You can't be altruistic in your job.
I mean.
If you're doing your job properly, the money will come.
Charity workers don't work for money, but everybody else
does.
No,
but if your focus is on the money, your focus is in the wrong place.
Right.
For case in point, okay, so I'm an agent and I'm representing an off-plan buyer. Mm-hmm. Right, and the off-plan buyer wants to buy a two-bedroom apartment, and I go, don't buy this unit because I know the developers are only paying me 3% commission. Do buy this unit because I know they're going to pay me 5%. I'm not working in the best interests of my client. If that 3% is a better option for him than that 5%, which is a better option for me.
Well,
so the divining rule in what you're doing is just to maximize your income and not best represent your client, you're in it for the wrong reason.
I mean, in a way.
Irrefutable, aren't I, Benjamin? Very clever.
But we're not here talking about why brokers are in, you know, real estate brokerage, because they really want to help their clients. Most of them are in it for the money, right? I mean, you're obviously very different, Barney.
I am, I agree.
You just want to help people.
Someone called me a legend in the industry the other day. That just made me feel really old.
Someone who knew nothing about the industry.
Hurtful.
So, I mean, there's a reason why, and we talk about it particularly in the off-plan market, some off-plan, you know, developers offer like 10%.
Do they?
You know, and some offer 2. Yeah.
I know them.
And the ones offering 10%, they want the brokers to focus on their product. And it obviously works, or else they wouldn't be doing it. So, you know, we have to be realistic about this. And you know, buyers out there should also be realistic about this, that there are some brokers who are not in it for the love. They're not in it just to help their clients. And they will sell their clients something which is less appropriate.
I think you're oversimplifying what... I'm not a charity worker, but what I'm saying is, if I'm chasing the dollar over chasing what's best for my client, I'm doing a bad job, right?
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
But I mean,
because you're going to get people coming to me going, you'll do this for free. I saw your podcast. You're a charity and I am not.
Yeah, in a way. But I mean, there's a reason why North Sea oil workers get paid loads more than, you know, someone else, because it's a difficult, dangerous job and you need to motivate people to do it. So you need to pay them more. Now, if someone's got a crap product, you need to pay them more to sell it. Right. And you know, very, very possibly, very likely, they're going to want to sell that over something which pays them less. I mean, it just makes sense. Particularly, or if we take a simple example, 2% versus 4%, you're going to get paid double to sell this as opposed to that. Of course, you're going to try and sell, you know, this. Now,
shameful.
Nah, I'm saying brokers. Obviously, I don't do brokerage myself, and I advise all my agents to represent their clients. What are you talking about? But you can't deny. And so something really interesting happened in the financial industry couple of years ago in the UK. So they had to give you a piece of paper which showed how much they were earning out of the deal. So because what happens it happens massively in banks and finance industries all over the world, is people are selling products to people who don't need it for the commission. And we have this a lot here. We all get cold called by someone, you know, trying to sell you, you know, some insurance scheme or something like that, which is not appropriate for you whatsoever, but they're doing it because they're earning a lot of commission on it. right? Instead of selling you what is appropriate for you. So in real estate, you know, I think it would be important for buyers to know, all right, so if this guy's, you know, if we've got two options here and he's pushing me to this one, how much is he earning out of that? You know, is it important to know?
So probably asking for a kickback.
Well, I mean, you know,
different podcast.
Hopefully not.
You can retrospectively look that one up.
Hopefully not, but so you should know.
So in Dubai, I don't know if it's the same in Abu Dhabi. I don't think it is, but in Dubai, it is mentioned on the Form F. If you're doing an end user purchase, so if I'm buying a house from you, on the Form F, the sales and purchase agreement, it says buyer's agent's getting this, seller's agent's getting that, and it's a percentage plus that.
Yeah, also the same in the MOU. But I mean, for secondary market, it's pretty much established, you know, 2% from the buyer, and in Dubai, 2% from the seller. So in the secondary market, I think you can be reasonably certain that your broker's not being influenced by the extra cash. Although there are circumstances where, for example, you want a particular unit, but it's split with another broker, your broker might try and steer you away from that to a unit that he's got direct because he can get more money, right? Mm. So, you know, and so he might be doing a bad job trying to influence you and doing that. Well, actually, we had a really interesting situation recently where we had a buyer for a unit and we made an offer through the other broker. And then the other broker said, oh, actually, I've got a client for it and your offer has spurred him to make a slightly higher offer and I'm doing the MOU and it's sold. Without giving our client the opportunity to make a higher offer. It's like, you know, done. Because they had the seller direct and they didn't, you know, bring our offer to the seller because they had their own client and they were going to make more money that way. So if you're a seller, you also need to look out for something like that where, you know, someone's gatekeeping your property.
How is that going to be disclosed? The seller would never know.
I mean, if you had exclusivity, maybe you'd try and say, listen, you need to bring me all the offers, you know, and that needs to be a contractual obligation. Because I think in the UK, you have to bring, you know, the client all the offers, even if it's lowball, crappy offer, you have to bring it. And in the UAE, sometimes we don't bring people global crappy offers because they get upset and you get emotional about it and you get a lot of them. Exactly. So sometimes you have to reject on behalf of your client. But
case in point, that broker was not acting in his client's best interest.
Absolutely, because of money.
Would have got more money.
So I think if you're a buyer or a seller, you really need to understand the financial motivations of the broker involved. You need to understand the money and you need to understand that, you know, maybe they don't want to do a split deal. Maybe they're not bringing you deals from other brokers.
So how do
and
you
holding your
circumvent
unit.
That? That's impossible to circumvent.
Well,
even contractually, you can still hide an offer, right? If you contractually sign something that says I will give you all the offers, you might not give all
If you find out later.
You find out later, but you're never going to find out.
Well, you might do. I mean, it's like there's a lot of data in the market, you know, for example. So particularly in this deal, you know, we thought, well, should we call the seller direct and say, listen, we've got a higher offer than what you've accepted, but, you know, our higher offer isn't being put to you because this broker's, you know, gatekeeping your units.
As we know, not always higher offers are accepted as per mum's neighbours.
sometimes they don't accept the offer for one reason or another, or it's a cash offer and yours is finance or whatever it might be. But I think if I was a buyer or a seller for that matter, I'd need to understand, you know, the financial motivations of the broker, because some are immune to that, like you, immune to the financial, you know, implications of your actions because you just want to do the best for your client.
Correct.
Not all brokers are like that. You know, some are just out for the money, or not just out for the money, but out for as much as they can get.
Would that make them a bad broker? I mean, their success to themselves would mean, you know, I made 4% out of that transaction rather than 2. I'm a really good broker. Or am I a really bad broker just getting rich at the expense of everyone?
Well, so what the enhanced commission, if we go back to off plan, if someone's offering 10%, that enhanced commission should make you do a lot of marketing for their product and find people who want to buy their product and then sell it. And that, you know, is a good broker, and the financial motivation there is working perfectly as it should. Where it gets skewed is where you've got a client, and as you say, you know, what's best for them is the 2%, but you're pushing them towards the 10% because you're going to make 5 times more money. Mm. So in that respect, you know, where you're possibly manipulating your client or telling them that this, you know, product is crap when it isn't, and telling them this product is great when it's rubbish, you know, that way you're a bad broker. But if you're just doing a lot more marketing on this product and getting buyers and selling it, you know, then you're doing your job right. You're being motivated.
So in the
right
secondary
way.
Market, a way that you can steer away from that is by avoiding the conflict of interest. So I deal a lot at the moment with people from Europe, and they say
Europeans?
To me, correct.
School's working out
for you. They don't want to buy a property that I from me that I am representing the seller as well, because that is a conflict of interest.
Hmm. Yes.
So and actually, there could be a legislation
not allowed.
Well, exactly. Mm. There's legislation where you cannot represent both parties.
Mm.
But again, that broker that you know circumvented your offer or didn't let your client, he was representing both sides.
Yeah. I mean, there is a situation where you can represent, where the same company can represent the buyer and the seller, and that's fine. But yeah.
It's still a conflict of interest, isn't it?
Well, the law in Abu Dhabi, I don't know what it is in Abu Dhabi, in Dubai, it is you must have a separate representation for each, but they can be from the same company.
Mm.
So you could have unscrupulous, you know, companies doing that, particularly if you've got the unit and the buyer. To get another representation of the unit, you've got to give it to one of your mates. So you're not going to give it to someone who's going to screw the deal for you, right? You're going to give it to someone who's, you know, safe and secure.
They would likely just put their name on the contract and have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, if it's probably a good idea. If you are a seller or a buyer, you don't want, you know, a buyer or a seller represented by the same person because it could be costing you money in the long run. What other things motivate brokers apart from money? Money's obviously the big one.
I mean, there's kudos. You know, anybody, well, it takes a very specific type of person, I think, to be a real estate broker. And you and I have done a podcast about that.
I mean, to be a good one, anyone can be a real estate
true,
broker.
True, to be a good one.
Mm.
And, you know, when you get to a certain level, there is a degree of notoriety that you get from being a good real estate agent. I mean, and that is then a vindication, not vindication, that is the seal of approval on the work that you've done to that point to have
yeah, that. Yeah, but is that a motivating factor? I mean, it's motivating to perhaps.
Everybody's slightly motivated by fame, let's call it, you know, for want of a better
why
word.
Why they're on social media, perhaps?
That's why everybody's on social media, apart from you, you dinosaur. You know.
Maybe I don't need the fame and the kudos.
I mean, I guess the question...
Actually, I don't sell
question,
anything, so also doesn't
question
that
being,
me?
You know, the guys who are on you know, Selling Sunset, you know, the volume of business that they do versus the level of notoriety that they have has kind of skewed a little bit. You know, all of these famous real estate agents who are, you know, Selling Sunset, let's say, for example... They are now way more famous than the amount of business that they do.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously doesn't harm them. But if we were trying to say to a buyer or a seller, okay, things you need to look out for when working for a broker, like in terms of, you know, how they're going to act and looking inside their mind. So we've said money. Do you think kudos is something they have to worry about? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah. So what should buyers and sellers
think about? There's no kudos in selling a two-bedroom in downtown, yeah. But there is kudos in selling a 300 million dirham villa on the Palm. Or Jamir Bay or Emirates Hill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the top of the podcast, you mentioned when a real estate agent goes in to negotiate for you, if you're a buyer or a seller. Is there something you need to look out for there? Should you be talking to the real estate agent about how they should pitch your offer? Or
I don't think so. I think that's actually something that I would definitely recommend sellers not to get involved in.
Yeah.
You know, there is a reason why we do what we do, and we if you are good at what you do, why you're good at what you do, and then to have, you know, a seller or a buyer breathing down your neck, going, I want you to do it this way. Like as not, you're probably dealing with somebody in terms of your real estate agent who's bought and sold quite a bit more than you have. So if you feel like your 2 cents worth is important in the negotiation, I would be inclined to sit back and listen to what your broker has to say beyond what you want.
What is your broker probably thinking about you as a buyer or a seller?
How do you mean?
Like, so obviously if you're you know, perhaps like trying to step in too much or whatever it might be, how is the broker kind of like seeing you? Obviously in an ideal world, they see you as like a friend and someone they want to help or, you know, whatever it might be. But how are they thinking about this transaction? You know, they just, obviously we mentioned the money side of it, but another thing is, can I get the transaction done as quickly as possible? So sometimes, you know, a broker might, let's say, lowball the seller and say, actually, you know, you think it's worth 10 million, it's actually worth 9 million. He says, okay, 9 million, and then you, quick deal, done, thank you very much. You know, I've got my commission and we're out of here. So that's another way in which, you know, brokers might be thinking.
Well, in that circumstance, the broker's got the seller what he was happy to take. In one of these, nobody ever buys or sells a house under duress unless you're in financial issues, right? So if you were happy to take 9 million dirhams for that house, you were happy to take it. The broker got it for you.
But what if you're misinformed?
You shouldn't really be misinformed in this day and age. You know, there are enough websites on that cover to buy real estate for you to have a very good idea of what your property's worth. It's when the sellers start ignoring that information, that's when they get themselves into trouble.
How do you mean? The unit just stays on the market?
The unit just stays on the market. Well, so my business partner, Mr. Fabrizio Saltini, said there are three reasons, and this is actually quite salient for someone as dumb as him. There are three reasons why
are available.
There are three reasons why a property doesn't sell. One is the price, two is the market, three is the agent, and that's it.
I would say one is the price, two is the price, three is the price.
No, because if you got the price right, then the agent is rubbish.
Yeah, but not the market. The marketing, I would say. Yeah, I guess maybe so. Price, marketing, agent. If you've got a really appalling agent, you can drop a lot of grenades.
Mm.
Yeah, but I think never the market, because if the market goes down, just your price needs to come down, right? So it's actually price.
True. I told you it was stupid, didn't I?
You were right. As usual, you were right. So if you were, let's say, a buyer, how would you go about picking a good one if you didn't know anything about real estate?
So my industry, my business is based around referrals. And that for me is, you know, if somebody is referring me as an agent, then I've done a good job for that individual. That individual's referred me to a friend, and that friend will contact me knowing I've been litmus or passed the litmus test from his friend. That is a foolproof, well, nothing's foolproof, but it's a much more accurate way of ensuring that the broker that you're dealing with is a good one and has the pedigree to do what you need.
So you think just get a referral?
Yeah. I mean, not just. There are ways for you to find out. You can go online and you can see who's done the most amount of transactions in your community. That can be slightly fudged again because, you know, some companies just put all of their transactions through one broker in the company. But, I mean, a more accurate and safest way is to get a referral.
So here's an idea. Because obviously most people go online on the property portals.
Yeah.
What if you were to take down all the property portals, just have a multiple listing service and an MLS between brokers, so they could share, the brokers could share between each other their units, and not have any Property Finder, Bayut and Divisl?
I'd be very happy.
So basically, buyers and sellers would be forced to work on referrals because they don't have that, you know. But obviously, there's cold callers as well, but still.
Yeah, I mean, you are then removing any option for marketing to a mass audience.
Like social media and Facebook, and that is social media, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, TikTok, that's all social media.
No, it's not actually. It's something completely different.
Okay, good. Yeah, so you've still got those ways and your own website and things like that, but not like that centralized platform where people just go, oh, pretty pictures and low price, and then you know, end up with a useless agent.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you'll pretty quickly weasel out or wheedle out whether you're working with a useless agent. You know, they don't call you back. They don't have the information. They don't arrive on time. They send you to a property to have a look and don't accompany you, that kind of thing. You know that's a bad agent. You know, I say to my team, you have to kiss a lot of toads before you find your prince. You know, for you to be able to
isn't it frogs? Or did you say toes?
A peek behind the curtain of agents, kissing toes everywhere. Yeah, you're going to have to speak to a lot of real estate agents before you find a good one. But when you do find a good one, for the love of God, stick with them, because, you know, the more you build a rapport with a real estate agent, the more we go back to the fact that they have your best interest at heart. You know, I'm quite happy to say to one of my clients, I don't think you should buy that property for X, Y, and Z reasons. You know, and you won't get that from a lot of real estate agents who just want you to buy something. But if I don't think it's right for you, I'll tell you before I even bring you to see it. We're going to see this. I don't think it's right for you because of X, Y, and Z. Up to you whether you want to come and see it.
True, and if you do find someone who works on referrals, then actually, when you've got a one-shot buyer because you got him off the internet or whatever, and you don't work on referrals, you know, you can, you know, screw him over, and you know, get the most money out of that deal because he's valueless to you afterwards. You use him up and you throw him away. But if you're someone who works on referrals, but if you work on referrals, then you want that guy to go away very happy with your service and continue to be happy with your service because that's how you do business.
So how would you
be wary of being a one-shot buyer or seller because people can just screw you over?
How would you get to make sure that you're dealing with a good broker, a reputable broker?
Yeah, absolutely. I would, because when I first arrived here, I wasn't in real estate. I was a lawyer, did I tell you that?
From Cambridge, right?
Not from Cambridge, I did my degree. Yeah, you know that one. So when I first came here, I didn't have anywhere to live, so I asked around the rugby club for a real estate agent and got a number. And they never answered. Then I found another one, and then I used her.
So it just throws my point completely under the bus.
She was fine, exactly. Yeah, she was fine. I'd not even heard of, I think probably it was only Dubizzle then. I hadn't even heard of Dubizzle to go online and even search for stuff like that. Mm. And I was 29 and, you know, wanted someone else to do the work for me. Yeah, internet's a scary place. So yeah, I mean, I did exactly that, and I think it's the most sensible way to go.
Cool, well, I think we've exhausted that topic. We have been the Two Fat Brokers.
I've been Ben from Abu Dhabi.
I've been Barney from Dubai. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.